brain really is fascinating. There's so much of who we are that is contained in the brain. Well, for more on that, let me bring back some insights that were shared previously about this awesome, awesome, awesome part of the body that we call the brain. All right, welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where we are getting ready to work your brain. Now, this awesome song from Jazz Worship and Praise Instrumental is not the one that's working your brain. I have something else that I want to share with you that I think will work your brain. It may stimulate your brain. As a matter of fact, it's going to talk about simulating the human brain, courtesy of Seeker and D News. Where do you want to take your brain? I want to know, where would you like to actually take your brain? Well, I tell you what, there are quite a few people who have some ideas as to where they'd like to take the brain of us Homo sapiens. Let me let you in on this little bit of 411. About the human brain and the plans that some people have for it.
Guys, get your name on the sign-up sheet now, because in 10 years, we're all uploading our brains to computers. You do not want to be the one that is last for that. I'm Anthony for D News, and a little while back we talked about how we could tell if our universe was a computer simulation and how we're working on our own computers to simulate our universe. Now that stuff is such a crazy long way off. So what about something simpler? What about building a computer simulation of the human brain? When are we going to be able to do that, and what are we going to use it for? Well, one of the biggest projects to reproduce human intelligence is the Blue Brain Project, which was created by the Brain and Mind Institute of the EFPL in Switzerland. Now, what's cool about this project is that it isn't AI like you see in video games or the Turing test. It's not trying to approximate human thought. It's actually trying to physically reconstruct it by simulating all of the individual neurons in the human brain. Now, that takes a lot of computing power, because every neuron requires the power of a modern laptop. And here's a fun fact: you have about 60,000 neurons in each of your cortical columns. Cortical columns are about 2 millimeters long, and you have 2 million cortical columns in your brain, so you would need about 120 billion consumer laptops to simulate the human cortex. Now, the Blue Brain Project uses specialized IBM supercomputers, but even with all of that hardware, they are still a long ways off. They're looking to boot up the RoboBrain in 10 years. So, once they do, what do they do with it? Well, there are a lot of possibilities. All of our knowledge and treatment of physical and psychological issues in the brain is very general. We're basing a lot of things on assumptions. We're doing a lot of hit and miss lab trials on people and animals. If we have a simulated human brain, we can mess with it as much as we want. We can see what happens if a particular synapse doesn't fire, or what the imbalance of a particular chemical is going to do. Hey, what happens if we just yank this bit out during surgery? You can poke and prod it until you see symptoms that are the same as medical problems. And once we know what causes something, we can better treat it. So there are some more out there uses projected on the horizon too. Once you've got this blank working brain, what's to stop us from transferring the contents of a human's brain into it? You know, you could save the minds of the particularly brilliant or creative and see what they could do with immortality. Or maybe all the rich people want to put their brains in computers and live forever. What happens then? Also, if that computer brain is a perfect simulation of a human brain, should we be allowed to poke and prod it? What makes it any different from you or me? I wouldn't want anybody experimenting on my brain, so why do we get to mess around with old Blue like that? Is there any difference between a brain created in a computer from scratch and a copy of a human brain that has been uploaded to the same computer. If the Blue Brain Project continues on schedule, these might be questions we have to start answering in the next decade. I don't know, how far off do you think we really are from something like this? Because I kind of doubt they're going to hit that 2023 deadline. Let me know down below and subscribe for more D News.
What do you think about that, ladies and gentlemen? Yeah, I'm saying, you're talking about essentially uploading a brain into the computer. What is the possibility of that happening? And I think this is probably one of the big questions that a lot of people would have. I know it's a big one for me. If people were able to go ahead and upload the brain, I mean, sure enough, upload the brain with all those neurons, all those nerve endings, all those synapses into the computer. Would we Homo sapiens be more likely to experiment for good, or would we be more likely to experiment for bad? Now, my guess is there would be some good experimentation going, and there would be some bad experimentation going. And when I say good and bad, I mean not so much whether people were able to come up with outcomes that were good or bad. I'm not even talking about whether, you know, mistakes were made. You know, sometimes people can, you know, we can have professionals who are performing surgical procedures and truly mistakes are made and bad outcomes come. You know, result, bad outcomes result because of the mistakes made. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about some of the goals that people would have for this type of research. I mean, you think about it. There were, from what history has told us, a number of people working in the factory on this part of this special project, and there was another group of people working on another aspect of that same project, and those two groups were not allowed to know what each other was working on. There was another group working on some other aspect of the same project, and of all the groups working on these different aspects of the same project, none of those groups were to talk with each other. Hush, hush. And then they went on ahead and they had the masterminds to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And once all the pieces of the puzzle had been put together, we had the atomic bomb, which was dropped on human beings. And unfortunately, even some of the people were masterminds behind making the atomic bomb did not know the reason, the real reason, that the folks who asked them to oversee the project asked them to oversee the project. Yes, there could, from a moral, ethical standpoint, be some very good reasons for this uploaded human intelligence experimentation. There could be some ethically and morally bad reasons. Which do you think would be pursued more? The good goals or the bad goals? Good reasons or bad reasons? Reproducing human intelligence by physically reconstructing human thought. Now, they're saying within 10 years. If it will happen at all, do you think it will happen within 10 years? Do you think it will take closer to 30 years? Do you think it'll take closer to 50 years? Do you say it'll never happen? So much that mankind is pursuing by way of, well, technology. Taking a look at, and just kind of look at some of the different aspects again. The significant places that a lot of people want to go with regards to holograms. How about another one that you've heard me talk about, where people want to be able to break down the human body, break it down, have it uploaded into a computer, sent via the network to another endpoint where it will come out through another computer system and be reassembled whole as the very same person coming out of the end computer who went into the starting computer. How about the moves to make robots more and more like humans, even to the point where they begin to be able to come up with their own thought processes, so they're no longer bound to just spitting out information that was put into them, but they can come up with their own thought processes like we humans do. Reconstructing the brain. Having the entire, you know, we've talked about this before, months ago. The desire that some have to upload the entire thought contents, now not the physical brain itself, but the entire content, thought content of the brain into a computer and have all that information saved forever. What would they do with that? Just curious. All right, so we're looking some more at checking out the brain. And I tell you what, fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. I tell you, the brain has fascinated so many people, probably more than just about any other one item on earth. They're taking a look, though, courtesy of Seeker, of what people can do with the brains. In fact, getting to the point where they're saying that people can actually control mental activity using brain scans. And they say that people who can see their brain activity can change it. And you've seen, you've probably watched some ECGs, some brain scans, some CT scans rather. And you've seen some of the waves as the professionals were watching what was going on with the brain. They're saying that if people can, quote unquote, see their brain activity, they can change it. And check this out. It doesn't take 3, 4, 5, 6 months of training to do it. They said that after just 1 or 2 neurofeedback sessions, new research is showing that people who can see their brain activity can change it. In the study, people were able to quiet the activity occurring in their amygdala. That's the almond-shaped brain region that processes emotions such as fear. So after seeing simple visual or auditory cues that corresponded to the activity level there, people in the study were able to quiet the activity in their amygdala, kind of settle their emotions, if you will. So it was published in the journal Biological Psychiatry. The findings reveal the incredible plasticity of the brain. You know, we've talked about that plasticity before, and the context was primarily that the brain can change to the point where intelligence can increase. Even if a person was disadvantaged in early childhood, maybe a person had reached a certain level of intelligence by age 18 or 22, 35, and they have found that senior citizens can actually begin to use their brains more efficiently, more effectively, more impactfully because of the brain's plasticity, its ability to do things. Oh, no, don't get too settled on that old adage that you can't, I don't really like this, but you get the point. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Let me tell you what, we can teach young humans, we can teach middle-aged humans, we can teach older humans how to work with their brains in ways that they may not have previously worked with them. There's a new technique, and this technique could one day be used as an inexpensive treatment for people with anxiety, traumatic stress, or other mental health conditions, according to the study's co-author, Dr. Tal Mahindler, a psychiatrist and neuroscientist at the Tel Aviv Center for Brain Functions in Israel. Past studies have shown that people have tremendous power to shape their brain activity. That's got to be encouraging. Seriously, that's got to be encouraging to know that we can shape our brain activity. There's something about having it within our reach, within our grasp, within our power to make positive changes within ourselves that is encouraging, inspiring, motivating. People using the power that we've been given by our Creator to shape our brain activity. As an example, mindfulness meditation, which is a type of meditation in which people focus on sensations from the body. These can help with symptoms of depression, anxiety, and get this, even low back pain. So we're not just talking about that which is emotional, but we're talking about that which is physical as well, using the brain. Studies show that Buddhist monks who have practiced meditating a lot are much better at clearing the mind than the average person. Clearing the mind. However, most of these attempts to control brain activity are indirect, and they often alter activity across the entire brain. You know, sometimes it's good to be able to target in order to achieve the goal that we're after. But Dr. Hindler and her colleagues wondered whether targeting the specific brain regions tied to specific conditions could be a more effective way of helping people with specific symptoms. So in a series of four different experiments with several dozen healthy people, Dr. Hindler and her colleagues asked the volunteers to sit inside a functional magnetic resonance imaging machine. Now, a number of you have heard me call that out a number of times before. Functional magnetic resonance imaging machine. So give me the letters for that. The functional magnetic resonance imaging machine. I think probably one of the easiest ways to remember is that for a long time we've known about the magnetic resonance imaging machine, and we just call it MRI for short. So with the functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, we still have the MRI, but we put the F for functional in front of it. So instead of just MRI, we have fMRI for functional magnetic resonance imaging. And so they're sitting inside this fMRI machine while simultaneously wearing an electroencephalogram hat, EEG hat. Some of you have had those EEGs done. Electroencephalogram hat. So they're sitting inside the fMRI machine while they're wearing an EEG hat. The fMRI provided detailed information about which brain regions were active, and the EEG measured the activity that was taking place in the amygdala. When they put these together, what was going on based on what they saw from the MFRI readings, based on what they saw with the EEG readings, the team was allowed to pinpoint the precise EEG signature that corresponded to amygdala activation. I tell you what, it is fascinating to me that we are able to make so many discoveries about what's going on. It's not all bad. There's a lot of good. Stay with me. Let's hear more about some of the good that can come out of this. I'll be right back.